Jose, this is PJ. What's up, man?
What's going on, PJ? You know I had to do that.
Well, first question, Jose, before we launch into this, how do you pronounce your last name?
Drapeau. So can you say draw?
Drapeau.
There you go. That's it right there. It's French for flag.
Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley, and our Competition Archery Media Podcast is brought to you by our platinum sponsors, Trueball Excel, Matthews, PSE, Hoyt, Black Eagle, and Elite. We certainly thank our sponsors for all they do for us. Today, we've got a special guest. We've got Jose Drapeau. And Jose, welcome. Thanks for being here. Drapeau.
I appreciate it.
I just said it wrong.
Hey, PJ, I like that. Drapeau.
You just told me it. I got it wrong. Jose Drapeau.
No worries. I like that Drapeau. It has a little oomph to it.
It does give a little kick to it.
Thanks for having me, PJ.
Jose, so I just want to let people know, we're going to get into your story there, but those of you who are on the competition scene, ASAs, USATs, whatever, you probably have seen, if you haven't noticed Jose out there, I bet you know who he is, because this guy is always full of energy. You hear him out there cheering people on, yelling to people across the ranges. Jose, it's been a pleasure just seeing you out there this past couple of years.
Well, actually, it's only been a year.
1 year. Feels like longer than that.
Yeah, I know, right? That's what happens when you're over vivacious.
Yes. But Jose, we wanted to talk to you because USA Archery just announced the 2021 USAT team, and there's Jose on it. Men's Masters compound, you're on it.
I'm so tickled pink, man. When I saw that for the first time, I was just lost for words. I mean, it was a culmination of a year and 3 months of hard work.
Incredible, isn't it? How's that feel? I mean, you're on there with, who is on the team? Tim
Gillingham, Keith Trail.
And Keith, right.
Yeah. I mean, we've had some knockout dragouts this past year. Very fortunate to be in those positions to go against these legends of the sport. You know, me just being kind of like the greenhorn on the circuit right now, just coming up against those guys. It's just been unbelievable. It was a real surreal experience.
That's awesome. Well, we certainly hope that 2021 is everything, you know, that all the competitions are held so that you can get out there and compete. But let's start from the beginning. Jose, you've only been shooting for a little over a year.
Yeah. Can you believe that? That's
how
crazy.
How awesome is that? Tell us how you got started.
Well, you know, it's not too of a unusual story wherein, you know, someone sees the Hunger Games. That's been a big component over the last couple of years where young kids get started. And that's exactly what happened. My 12-year-old saw the Hunger Games. Was kind of tickled pink with seeing the archer shoot in the movie. And he said, I wanted to get a bow. So we went to Walmart, bought a little cheap $15, $20, quote unquote, compound bow. And, you know, so he could shoot in the backyard. And, you know, when he got the bow and started shooting it, I mean, he's sort of like me. He's very A-type personality. Like within a week or so, I mean, he was like at 10 or 15 feet. He was like drilling the X. And I'm like, dude, do you like doing this stuff? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. So we stepped it up a notch, got him a little bear cruise. And, you know, we started learning, got on YouTube, doing the same thing what everybody else does, just trying to figure out what in the world is archery. And this is around July of last year. And, I mean, he just went bonkers with it. And we ended up going to Big Woods Goods here in Canton, Georgia, just to get some fundamental, you know, we want to be safe because he had a real compound bow that can shoot at 40 pounds. And again, I didn't know anything about archery. So I figured let's go get him a lesson and learn about archery. And we went and got an orientation, both me, my wife and him. We were not shooting at the time. We just used the rental bow, but that's how it got started. He watched the Hunger Games. He got fascinated after a week of shooting that one little bow. We got him a real bow and then went to a real range and started to learn about archery.
That's awesome. And now, so he started to learn about archery. He got into competitions. I believe you said he won a JOAD title.
He won the gold medal after 4 months of shooting. He won the gold medal at the Georgia Games, which is sort of like our mini Georgia Olympics. They have karate, swimming, cycling, archery, all that kind of stuff. But in his division, he shot up a class. He shot in the cadet or Bowman class, one of those two classes. But he ended up winning gold there. And it was a three-hour endeavor, but we had so much fun that at that time when he won the gold medal at the Georgia Games, we ended up investing in bows ourselves, my wife with a recurve and then me with a Hoyt Prevail. But yeah, he won the JOAD Nationals local tournament in Florida.
And so you had never shot a bow before, or had you like just in passing or something? Never.
No. The last time I remember shooting a bow, and it was a stick bow, was in the Boy Scouts, where, you know, you go for a summer camp. And we did 2 days of, you know, shooting a bow, but that was like some 45 years ago.
Yes, you're in the master's division, which means you're over 50. How old are you exactly?
I'm 51.
51. Okay, just over the line there. Yeah. So you start shooting, and what did you discover?
I discovered that, you know, being a former athlete, I was like, this is something that I can do without worrying about, you know, my knees hurting, my back hurting, any of those things. And it was kind of a zen moment. The very first time I shot the compound bow in orientation, it was like an aha, like, wow. And that's just kind of how it just really kind of enveloped me in thinking like, you know, this is cool. Let me see. And then, you know, the whole thing about shooting a target and trying to get the arrow. And I'm like looking at other people on the range shooting. And I'm like, how in the world are they getting that little bitty arrow in the X? And that's what fascinated me. And then me as an A-type personality, I'm like, I want to do that. And that's when the journey began.
Yes. And so we should mention your sport that you mentioned, you're an athlete, was cycling. That was what you had done.
Yeah, I was a professional cyclist for 8 years and nationally ranked cyclist for 26 years.
Incredible. So you already have that competitiveness in there. That's something, I mean, athlete, that never goes away from what I'm told.
No.
So you start shooting your bow with other people and you're like, hey, I want to beat these people.
Well, it wasn't necessarily I want to beat them. I just wanted to see, like, they were hitting the X consistently, and I'm like hitting in the top corner. I'm not even hitting in the color, and I'm like shooting. I'm like, how are they doing that? It's like, and it doesn't look like they're putting any effort into it. And I'm looking at them like they're hitting an X, and I'm barely hitting the paper. And I'm like, that's what drove me, was like, how are they doing something that doesn't look like it takes a lot of effort, but they're hitting these like these little bitty tiny arrows into a thing that was like no bigger than a quarter. And at 18 meters, I'm like, I'm freaking out. Like, there's no way that you guys are doing that. How is it, like some kind of laser or something? I'm like, so that's what just got me really, really curious about wanting to know more about archery.
Right. And so how did you advance then? So, 'cause this is particularly interesting, because what we tend to see is, especially in the competitive side, the tournament side of archery, getting in the door seems to be the hurdle for people. They either are intimidated or whatever because they see these people shooting like that. That obviously didn't bother you. So how did you go about that process?
You know, that's interesting. And another reason why I really love the sport of archery is your ability to kind of find your traction within the sport, within yourself. And that's what I did. I just committed, like, and obviously being a former athlete, you know, you have to have that mindset, that A type of personality. But not to say that if you don't have that, you can't reach those same type of goals. But essentially with what I did was I convinced myself that this is something that I could do and that actually I could do well at. But I just had to persevere and make sure that I applied anything that I might have learned through, you know, the little entry-level classes that I took, and then just immersing myself into archery, you know, literally going on YouTube. And I mean, I probably watched before my first competition, I probably watched a good 50 hours worth of archery videos, which in essence, I was doing that to kind of help my son. So because, you know, I'm also a level 4 U.S. national swim coach. So I'm one about being knowledgeable about something. I don't want to just haphazardly try and coach someone. So I spent a lot of time on YouTube just trying to understand the sport so that way I could coach my son appropriately.
Right. And so for you, what was your first competition?
So my first local competition was the Georgia State Field Championships, where I finished third in my first ever competition after I think about a week and a half of shooting. To give you a funny, I was shooting field championships with arrows that you hunt with. So yes. I had the Maxim Reds.
Yeah.
not tuned to my bow. I literally bought them out of the box, not tuned to my bow. I think I lost 3 of the 12 arrows.
Shooting from a Hoyt Prevail.
Yes, shooting from a Hoyt
You're
Prevail.
Shooting Carbon Express Maxima Reds. Nice.
Yeah. And I got one into the top of the frame of the target, and then I missed 3 arrows, but still finished third because there was actually only 4 people in my division.
Now, Jose, I'm sure you realize now, field for your first competition, that's jumping in the deep end, man.
Oh, yeah. To say the least, I mean, I didn't know with what I didn't know, but, you know, frankly, I didn't care because at that point, it was just fun. I was just, you know, I don't like losing $25 arrows, but at that point, I mean, just, you know, going out there into the woods and, you know, hearing stories, you know, all my friends when I was in school about going hunting, which I never did. And, you know, it kind of brought me back to that. It's like, this is fun. You know, I'm in the woods, I'm shooting at targets, I'm using arrows. So that whole thing was really interesting.
Jose, I can tell you now then, the very first 3D shoot I did, 1990 or something like that, I went out with 12 arrows that I had bought from Kmart and I came home with none. So I'm right there with you, man.
It was great.
So you went to that tournament, and then was it one of those things where you were just like, hey, this is great, I want to do the next one? Yeah. Did it kind of snowball for you?
Yeah. I mean, and it did snowball. It's like for me, you know, like you said, I'm very competitive, and competition doesn't scare me. People doesn't scare me. You know, how I challenge myself is what kind of scares me at times, because sometimes I'll jump before I look, right? And I think that is with what got me to where I am right now. I did a lot of jumping before looking. So for me, it's like, okay, it's either do or die. I mean, you're at an age right now where, you know, from a business standpoint of view, I run my own company. You have the resources to do that. There's nothing keeping you except you from moving forward. So I actually saw that there was a national competition coming up that I was interested in doing, but I told myself that I would have to do the Georgia State Championships and finish in the top 3 before I would commit to the first national competition the following month and a half later, which was the Texas Shootout in Texas. Uh-huh. So I ended up saying, okay, if I do well, so I did give myself, you know, an out. If I didn't do well at the Georgia State Target Championships, not knowing what I didn't know, if I didn't do well, I wouldn't do the national championships. And if I did well, then I would go to the Texas championship to let me know that what I've learned to that point would at least not let me lose face, if you will. So when I did the Georgia State Championships, I ended up talking to George Riles. I said, George, you know, George, what would be some good scores to make here, you know, at the Georgia State Championships, the Target Championships? And George said, well, if you score like, you know, 1,000 or under, that's pretty much entry level. If you score 12-12, and he gave me the specific number, 12-12 to 1,300, that's a good intermediate score. And like an advanced or pro level score is going to be like a 1,350, 1,380.
Aha. Uh-huh.
PJ, ask me what score I scored.
Jose, what score did you get?
A 12-12, exactly.
How about that? Right on the money.
George. Exactly. I said, so I'm an intermediate archer. So that tells me not only did I score 12-12, but I ended up winning the gold at the Georgia Championship. So by winning gold, that gave me the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to go jump in at the deep end and shoot Masters Pro at the Texas Shootout. And that's when the real journey began.
Okay, so your first pro level, what's the time span between you've bought your first bow, 2 months you'd been shooting?
13 weeks.
That's incredible.
Yeah, now, that was 13 weeks, actually.
Now, this Hoyt Prevail that you're shooting, what's on it? What's it set up? Do you have a full open setup?
Yeah, it was a full open setup. There was nothing. It was just the bow. So I actually, through research and looking on YouTube, looked at what was popular, which is what all I had to go on. And I looked at what was popular with regards to Shrewd and all the different type of components. And I literally built the bow up from that. I ended up going on eBay and finding the Prevail, but it was actually and this is no lie. I went on eBay just looking for, a USA red, white, and blue bow. Because on one of George Ryle's videos, he has a student there with a red, white, and blue bow. I said, that looks so cool, So I literally went on eBay looking for that same type of bow, because at that point, I didn't want to invest $1,800, $1,900 into just a bow. So I went on eBay, found a bow that was literally what I was looking for. It was a 37. And it just so happened to be that it was at Big Woods Goods in Canton, Georgia, like literally 20 minutes from my house. So talk about karma. I went there, bought the bow, and then from there it was just, trying to figure out how I need to build it up, asking the tech there a dozen thousand questions, and then we built up the bow to my specifications of what I thought I would need to perform well at the Texas Shootout, and that's what I did, and then started practicing at that range, because at that point, I didn't know where I was going to practice. I thought I was going to end up shooting in the backyard. Yeah. But come to find out, they had a range there. So that's where my home range was established.
Gotcha. All right. So you go to Texas. And that now, Texas is your first pro
national
level
competition.
And you shot in the pro class.
Yeah. The first USAP that
open,
I've ever done.
I should say. Yeah. It's in those type of tournaments. It's... You would have been seniors, or were you masters at that point as well?
I was a masters at that point. I specifically entered in because I didn't know with what I didn't know. All I knew is that I could shoot in the masters class because I was, over 50. And I was thinking, it's like, well, I'd seen and started learning of the who's who of archery. I was like, well, let me dip my toe into the masters because I'd seen, Tim and all these other guys that used to be pros that were now in this class. It's like, well, let me just tip my toe first into this class and see how I perform before I end up trying to go against some of the big boys.
Yeah. And that's everyone 50 and older competes in the master's class. If they want to, you could drop down into the senior division, which would be where your Rio Wilds and Braden Galantines are shooting, et cetera. Okay, so how did Texas Shootout go?
So that was an unusual experience. So I've never shot in the wind before. We had 15, 20-mile-an-hour crosswinds the whole time, constant, which I wasn't familiar with. So this is a funny story. So I ended up I buy the best of the best because I'd rather grow into my equipment than, staggering, buy mediocre equipment, past the level of that, and then going – onto the next one. But what I did is I bought the best of the best. So I bought some Pro Tour X10s, and I was at Texas 2 days before shooting in the wind, trying to learn how to do that. And I swear to you, PJ, I could not hit the target. I lost two X10s that day. And I luckily, now get this, I luckily brought my FMJ. Don't know why I brought them, but I brought some Easton FMJs, and I was the only person on the line the day of competition that was not, one, shooting a carbon arrow, and two, shooting a skinny arrow, because these were the 5mm FMJs, aluminum, into a 15-mile-an-hour, 20-mile-an-hour headwind. I mean, across.
Yes. Now, but here's the best part. So you did all that, and yet it didn't discourage you?
No, it didn't, because I didn't know. I didn't know. All I knew is that, hey, these arrows aren't flying right. And again, these arrows are not tuned to my bow. I bought these because I don't know how to tune. So I don't know how to do any of that stuff. So I'm just buying the arrows and I'm just shooting.
So you bought X10s that didn't even fit your bow.
They were not cut. They were full length 32. The weight, I think the points on them were like 100 or 120 or something like that. They were not cut. All I did was glue in the points. I had them glue in the points. And, you know, I shot them like that. I put, the only thing I asked the tech for was what weight should I go with? And he says, well, you know, standard weight would be about 100 to 120. And I said, well, let's just go with the 100 because, you know, I just thought that that would be the way to go. And I shot 32 inch uncut Pro X10s. And that's probably why I wasn't hitting the target at all, because I lost two of them.
Did they at least give you, did you at least have the right spine?
No, I had the right spine. Okay, I was shooting a 250 spine because, you know, the 37s, the Prevail 37s are pretty aggressive. And obviously we were shooting 60 pounds. So I was right at 60 pounds. So the spine was right. It's just nothing else.
That's incredible.
You know, but I ended up finishing seventh. I qualified 12th and I beat three other people to get into the qualification round. And I ended up going up against Tim for the first time, who was actually shooting on my bail. So we shot on the same bail.
Okay. So now at this point, you know who Tim Gillingham is from all your research, but yet you haven't been in the sport very long. Now, this time later, what do you think about that, that in your first national competition, you're shooting with Tim Gillingham, the hammer?
I'm laughing my ass off. Because I'm like, I didn't know that he was such the legend. I looked at him on the videos to learn about arrows. I knew nothing about his background, how long he'd been shooting. I just saw some of these really old school, you know, videos on arrow building because I wanted to try and understand the type of spine of arrow that I needed and this, that, and other. But it was hilarious when I look back at it, you know, even 3 months after that competition, I'm looking back at it and he actually picked me up and offered a sponsorship because I finished seventh and he knew that it was 13 weeks into my archery journey. And I said, you know, once I knew that who he was and everything like that, cause I'd seen his videos, and I kind of, you know, put him up on a pedestal saying, man, I've been watching your videos, trying to learn with what I can about archery, blah, blah, blah. And I asked him, like, how do you go about getting a sponsor? And he's like, you don't have an arrow sponsor? I was like, no, I've only been shooting 13 weeks. It's like, well, send me an email and we'll have a talk. And after I sent them that email and said, you know, let's have a talk and this, that, and other, he offered me a sponsorship through Gold Tip.
Yeah. How about that? 13 weeks in, man, you're doing national competitions. You're picking up sponsors. Jose, this is the best story ever.
Isn't it crazy? I've been really fortunate though, PJ. I really have. I mean, the community, the archery community is, I mean, just a year and 3 months into it now, it's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, even my previous sports, I've never seen the community be as such as it is with archery than any other sport that I've played. And I've played a number of sports. And, you know, this is going to be like a lifetime sport. And even if I'm not competitive and competing, I mean, this is something that I'll always do. And it's the people, even yourself, PJ. I remember when I first met you at Lancaster.
That's what I was going to ask you. I thought it was at the Classic.
Yeah, it was at the Classic. And I was a big fan of yours. You know, I'd seen you on YouTube and doing all your little, I mean, some of the product stuff that I was telling you about that I put on my Prevail, I learned from the things that you guys did on your little videos for Lancaster.
Nice.
So, you know,
that's
and I have awesome. Dropped some coin at Lancaster as well.
Well, good.
So.
I couldn't remember exactly what tournament was, but I definitely remember when Jose came up and introduced himself to me, and I was like, man, this guy is my kind of archer. He is fun.
Yeah. I just wanted a photo op with you. I was like, yeah, I got my picture taken with PJ.
So, all right. So we've covered now you shot field. You shot the 50 meter, USAT, typical format. You're at the Classic shooting indoor. I mean, you're just getting into all of them, everything.
Yeah, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know what I didn't know. I just wanted to do competitions that really tested my ability with what I've learned to that point. So they were either three steps backwards or two steps forward. So doing these competitions, actually, you know, it was like trial by fire, you know. So I was learning a great deal. I may have not done really well. Like, I finished 47th, you know, but I did learn about distraction and how one story at Lancaster is that I think on the second day or the first day, there was a bounce off, a glance off, and it literally came back off the target and landed 2 feet in front of me. And
that when far. It landed,
that far. It was an aluminum. It was a 2712 or something like the 2715. And it, you know how that aluminum, when it hits the ground, it makes a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And it slid straight to me. And as I was trying to let the shot break, I missed the target, PJ. Because you know how they say when you walk by somebody and you're trying to shoot, they tend to kind of hear you walking and it takes their mind away. That's exactly what happened to me. And my arrow followed wherever I was looking to. So
no kidding.
So that was a surreal experience as well.
So that was this past year, the 2020
yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. Yep.
And so then, you know, what is it? 2-3 weeks later, whatever, you go to the Vegas shoot.
Yeah, that was fun, man. That was crazy. No expectations whatsoever. I just wanted to meet people. I wanted to experience that high level of competition.
Yeah. Biggest tournament in the world.
Yeah, I've traveled the world and I've done competitions in all different countries and stuff like that. So from that perspective, it didn't bother me. You know, again, the competitors don't bother me. You know, the environment. I mean, I've raced bikes in crowds of 300,000 plus going up a mountain. So, you know, the crowd doesn't bother me. Now, I had to learn how to deal with the distractions of the noise while trying to focus. That's a different thing. But overall, I mean, the atmosphere was, I mean, enigmatic. I mean, it was just crazy at Vegas. But when I touched the line, it's like I went into the Twilight Zone. It was weird. You know, my first day, I cleaned the first four rounds. And I mean, like literally the first four rounds, all X's. And then my dumb butt, you know what the bad thing to do is when you're on the line and you're doing well is to start thinking about, well, I'm going to shoot a 300.
Yeah, that's the kiss of death, man.
The very next end, XX. Eight.
Oh, jeez.
So that was the end of my goal to get into the shoot off and stuff like that. But I still had a great time. I shot for my first Vegas. I shot 881 for all 3 days. So I was only 19 points off, and this is only six months into shooting. So 6 months into shooting to get an 881 and finish 77th out of 158 competitors from around the world.
That's
awesome. I was ecstatic.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Not to mention I got pictures with everybody that I've been seeing on video for the better part of 5 months and stuff like that. So it was great.
So, okay. So now we've added indoor to the repertoire and then we come into 3D season. You show up at ASAs.
So let me backtrack to Vegas. So on the last day of Vegas, I like see this dude in a Matthews jersey up in the stands, just chilling by himself. And I'm like, you know, walking up and, you know, I noticed that it's Dane Johnson.
Yes.
You know, at that point, we had already gotten word that some competitions were going to get canceled. I think in February, remember, because of COVID and stuff. I knew that Arizona had already been canceled and Gator Cup was on the chopping block. So I was already looking for something because I knew the first two, because, you know, I'd done the Texas shootout and I wanted to, my goal was to, for 2020, was to make the USAT team. And I thought, okay, that's going to go out the window now because they canceled Arizona. So I saw Dane Johnson sitting there. And I had heard about 3D, but knew nothing about it. And I saw Dane win Benning. And I was like, let me ask him. Dude, this guy is so cool. He spent 45 minutes breaking down what 3D was. And he's the reason, Dane Johnson is the reason that I ended up doing 3D.
No kidding. How about
no
that?
Kidding.
Yeah, he's a great kid.
Yeah.
Super guy. So what was your first 3D? Did you go to Foley or
Kentucky?
Oh, you went to the Kentucky one. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that was the first baptism of fire and, you know, down there on the power line.
And now what division did you shoot there?
Master senior. So I shot senior known 50.
Okay.
So that's like the semi-pro class for the masters.
Okay. Yep. Gotcha. And I mean, that's, that's some heavy competition there.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys are good. Yeah. And so here you are. Had you even seen these targets before?
Never. I literally, that was, so Kentucky was in, I can't remember when was Kentucky.
They were moving around. I think they were moving, June.
Because it got canceled. Yeah, yeah. It got canceled once and then got pushed to June.
I think June.
So I didn't see what I was shooting at were the paper targets, the DARE paper targets.
Okay. Yeah.
That has the 14. So that's what I shot on before Kentucky.
Gotcha.
So
I'd never
shot on a 3D animal before then. So.
Right.
But I did after.
And so how did that go?
So that was interesting because I had my bow set up for USAT, which was a 330, a 364th peep. I had the wrong clarifier in there. So you know how dark the power line was.
Yeah, the darkness.
So not only was it dark, I couldn't see anything. So to say that I was shooting blind would be an understatement.
Oh, so, you must have just looked through that peep and just saw black. Nothing.
Yeah, and I was shooting early in the morning. So we were shooting at like 9 o'clock or something. So I on the first half, literally, I didn't, unless the animal was brown, I couldn't see anything. So I was literally guessing. I would literally be at full draw. I would look away from my riser, see where I wanted, and then go back. And that's how I aimed for the first 9 targets. And I think I did, I shot a 197 the first day and a 195 the second day.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so. But I wanted to try and shoot even. The Panther was killing me.
I was going to say the Panther, the Javelina. Well, it gives you a couple dots.
Yeah, the Javelina was really hard. So, and again, I had never, don't know about course management. Don't know about, all I knew is that the 10 was about this big, so big, and I needed to shoot somewhere in there. That's what I knew in Kentucky.
Gotcha.
But I will say this, Sean from Hamsky really helped me out. Because the second day, I think the first day I shot a 195, and then the second day I shot a 197 because Sean from Hamsky ended up, because I had one of the Insight peeps, he actually helped me get the right setup. So I ended up buying another one, getting the right clarifier. I got the right lens in there. So the second day I shot more consistently. I think I only shot like 3 or 4 8s and no 5s, where the first day I shot like, 3 or 4 5s and a miss or something like that.
Yeah, I'm hoping he opened up your aperture a little bit too.
Oh, yeah. So I learned a lot from those guys, man. I mean, again, the community. The ASA community, I mean, with me asking questions, I mean, it was just so surreal that everybody was so open and helpful.
That's what I was going to say. From what I've noticed in just interacting with you and seeing you interact is you're not afraid to ask questions.
Oh, and, absolutely not.
And it just shows that, yeah, if that's all you do, hey, just go up and ask a question. You can resolve problems quickly in that community.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's one of the things too that I feel is keeping other archers that are just going into their local shops to wanting to compete because they're so afraid of one, asking questions, and then two, looking like they don't belong. That's the main thing. They feel like they don't belong because just like myself, when I first started, I was seeing all these guys hit all these X's. I'm like, man, I want to do that. My thought wasn't, man, I can't do that, right? So I want to get out there and show everybody that someone can step in at the deep end, and though it's challenging, it can be done if you just apply yourself.
Right. So last season you competed in, I think you said, 3 ASAs.
No, this season I competed in 3. I didn't compete in any last year.
This past, like 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did Kentucky, Coleman, and then the last one, Foley.
In Foley. Okay. And you ended up finishing where?
13th.
13th.
Yeah. 13th in shooter of the year. So I finished 42nd in Kentucky. And then, I bought a half a range after Kentucky because I really loved the sport. And then in Coleman, I finished 14th, and then in Foley, I finished 16th, and I had 2 breakdowns because it was raining around the deluge before Foley. Mm-hmm. So I had 2 breakdowns, and my string stretched. I actually had to shoot off by 7 yards just to get the arrow to hit. But I was down I was down 19 and I shot 8 12s in a row and finished 7 down.
Wow. That's awesome. So,
and that result ended up having me, my goal for the 3 ASAs was to finish top 10 in the semi known 50 or the senior known 50. And I finished 13th, but I know that I would have finished higher if I wouldn't have gotten those two breakdowns, but that's no here or there.
Gotcha. And then
it was fun.
in between, I guess the second and third, we had Outdoor Target Nationals.
Oh my God. Don't even,
more that was pouring a rain.
It was a surreal and wonderful experience. I have not had so much fun since I was in France going down a mountain 72 miles an hour. I mean, on a bike, that is.
Yeah, of course. I
mean, yeah. Nationals was so much fun. I mean, we started off practice in bright sunshine, clear skies. And as soon as competition hit, the skies opened up, the winds came in. You know, it was, I mean, the ground, it felt like the ground had opened up and started swallowing us. I mean, you know, I couldn't see a quarter of my foot because it had sunk so far into the ground.
Yeah, I can't believe I saw the Fields guy. And when that rain was just coming down and he was looking at it and he was like, oh, man. And he said, you know, if this was a soccer or football competition, they wouldn't be playing. He's like, yeah. These archers, you're still out there tearing up the fields.
I know. It was awesome, though. I mean, like, you know, I got to meet Roger Willett. I didn't even know who he was, actually.
Yeah, someone he doesn't shoot many. Yeah, so that was, he came out because he's in Virginia, so.
Yeah, and he someone told me that, you know, he was a World Cup winner. You know, I mean, Roger's a very unassuming guy, right? He's just there. He's short and everything like that. And I told him, it's like, man, I just started shooting not too long ago. Man, it's awesome. It's like, somebody told me that you won some World Cups before. Is that true? And then we just started talking and jaw-jacking. Unbeknownst to me, that I was going to end up in the finals. I was hoping to get this into the story, within the story here at Nationals, but I was hoping to get to compete against him because my intention was to win Nationals. I went there knowing that I could win Nationals. And, you know, when I saw that he did so well, I mean, my intent was the gun for him and Tim, both of those guys. Yeah.
So how did you shoot in qualification?
So qualifications didn't go as well. I finished 12th. You know, I just couldn't get my bearings, you know, with the shooting off, with the wind and then the rain on top of that. So, you know, as I was still kind of cultivating and learning about that stuff, you know, I didn't perform to what my expectations were for that event. So I did finish 12th. Going into qualifications, but just like the Texas shootout, I was thinking in the back of my head, I've qualified low and, you know, worked my way through. And that's what my intent was to work my way through. If I could do it once, I could do it again.
Right. So then you get into the head to heads and how did that go?
I don't know what happened, PJ, man. Something just clicked and I just started steamrolling. Like literally just, I mean, everything just felt so fluid. I think like everything that I had learned up to that point was just happening naturally. I mean, I wasn't forcing anything. I was so relaxed. I wasn't letting the wind bother me, the rain bother me, nothing. And I think I was the only one, too, with my arrows. One of the reasons why I wasn't so concerned about the rain, I was actually shooting directly at the X. I wasn't shooting off because I was running 160 points, which I think benefited me because a lot of the other archers were running 100 and 120 grain points and the wind was blowing them off. Me, I was aiming directly at the X and hitting where I was aiming.
Uh-huh. Okay. So how far did you get in that?
Yeah. So what ended up happening is that I steamrolled through two guys and, you know, I beat them by 5 or 6 points. And then I had Tim Gillingham in the quarterfinals. Uh-huh. And the rain, I don't know what happened, but the rain just started coming down heavier and I'm like, okay. And then Tim was looking, it's like, we're up. It's like, what do you mean we're up? It's like, we're going against one another. It's like, cool. All right, man. See you on the line. So we get on the line and we start shooting and, you know, the rain's coming down, the wind's blowing and Tim is jaw jacking. He's talking. He's talking. I was like, I'm looking at him. I was like, what are you doing, man? So we start shooting. The whistle goes off. This is like, he's talking right up to the whistle. The whistle goes off to shoot. And then we start shooting. For me, XX10.
Yes.
Tim got a 10, 10, 9. Tim looks over at me. He's like, you're ready to play, aren't you? And I just smiled at him. And I ended up beating him by 2 points.
In outdoor Target Nationals, you took down the hammer.
The hammer.
With a year's experience.
With the wind and the rain, Tim missed the shot. I mean, he shot over the bale. When I saw him do that, I freaked out. I shot a 5. I almost missed the bail because he missed the bail.
Oh,
and then
man.
We went back to the line and we just looked at each other. You know how Tim is. I mean, he's like, man, I'm so stupid. And he gets immediately down. And then for me, I just tried to zone out and I just tried to push because I knew he'd be chasing me hard. And he did. He chased me hard and I kept them at bay. And on the last I ended up beating him by 2.
Now, how's that feel?
Dude, it was an unreal. I mean, I was just in the twilight zone. I'm like, who's next? That's literally how I was thinking. I was like, who's next?
Give me the next one.
I mean, and what was crazy is that this bale, 179, I swear it had a hex on it. Because Tim missed the bale. All right. And then we go into the semifinals. I'm on his bale now. So I'm on 179, the bale that he missed on. So I'm on 179. I shoot all my arrows on the first end into 180.
Oh.
I could have sworn that I was directly in front of, and all of my arrows went straight into 180.
No.
So I missed my chance. I mean, because the guy that I was going up against only beat me by, I think, like 8 or 9 points. I came back.
Even with 3 misses.
Even with 3 misses, I came back. Wow. I mean, he only beat me by 8 or 9 points or something like that. And I ended up getting beat and then going into the bronze medal match. But what's so funny about this same bale, the guy that beat me that was ending up going against Roger Willett for the gold medal, he ended up on 179 and he ended up, his release broke.
That's the cursed bale.
It was a cursed bale. Tim missed the bale completely. I shoot 3 arrows into 180 right next to it. And the next guy that came, his release broke. I mean, it was crazy.
Wow.
But I ended up going up against Keith, and me and Keith were going head to head. He'd be ahead by 1 point. I'd be ahead by 2. He'd drop back. We'd get even. And on the last end, we shot our arrows and I had 2 arrows that were 9-10 liners. And if one of them would have been in, we would have done a 1 hour shoot off.
Wow.
Both of them ended up being out, and I ended up losing to Keith, the bronze medal, by 1 point.
4th place at Outdoor Target Nationals with, are we even at a full year of experience by now?
Yes, we're one year, 1.5 months.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, that's, as an athlete who has done this stuff, I mean, you got to feel good about that. Like, hey, this is going in the right direction for me.
No, it is. I mean, yeah, I'm a very humble guy. For me, it's not about, again, who I beat or who I'm going against. It's that inner strength that I'm building within something that I really enjoy. And that's how I keep myself centered. You know, when I was talking to Roger Willett, he was so unassuming. I mean, you wouldn't even know that he just won the gold medal, you know, when he beat the guy that ended up having it. And I was acting the same way. We were just chatting like we hadn't even just shot for the medal rounds because we knew what we wanted to do. And we tried to achieve that. And that's what kept us grounded, right? So there's not a cockiness or like me beating, even though he did miss the bail, me beating Tim, and nobody had beat him up until that point in spot. And it, for me, it's like, first of all, I turned to Tim. It's like, this is not how I wanted to win, you know. And, you know, if circumstances would have been different, we might have had a different result. They are what they are. Good job shooting. And you know how Tim's going to be. He's like, okay. It isn't what it is. So I'm not happy, but you can't be. You know,
Roger probably just wanted to talk to you about turkey hunting. That's all he ever talks about.
And land stuff in Virginia about what, you know, he's always talking about that stuff. But super cool guy, super cool experience. Everybody was super nice, you know, patting me on the back. I mean, even Real Wild was like, you know, looking at me like, who are you? It was just a really cool experience overall.
Okay. So then we move on from Target Nationals. There was, I forget what even was next. There was so many different events. I mean, after the ASA was next, then was it like Buckeye or did you do that?
So I missed the Buckeye because one, I didn't know it was on the USAC calendar because I thought it was going to be the Texas Shootout. So they had Coleman. So I ended up going to Coleman instead of going to the Buckeye Classic, I believe. Or is it Foley? I can't remember. It was one of the ASAs and I'd already committed to doing the ASA because I'd signed up and paid and wasn't aware that the Buckeye Classic was actually part of the USAP. For some reason, I thought it was going to be. So that was my mess up and lesson learned. But, you know, it almost cost me. But luckily, I did so well at SoCal, which was the next one after Coleman was SoCal. So I did Coleman. I finished 14th or 16th there. You know, did really well, was on point, was very consistent. I think one day I shot a 204 and then another day I shot a 198. So I ended up, overall even, so, you know, I went from 42nd, the first competition I've ever done to 16th. So that was a stark improvement against the same guys that I've been shooting against.
Sure,
so I was happy with that result.
Well, and like I said, that senior class there, I mean, the senior known 50, that's some stout competition there.
Yeah.
It's a big class and they're good. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's really cool, and again, this goes to show you that even if you don't know what you don't know and you're competing against some of these guys, they were so accommodating. You know, I got frustrated a couple of times because, you know, I didn't know what I'd know with some of the things that I was doing. And they would just give me tidbits, just nothing coaching wise, just saying like, you know, hold a little bit longer. You know, it's like, you know, turn a little bit more because the shade's coming in. Do you need an umbrella? That kind of thing. And that made the world. That made a world of difference in my confidence and how I went about managing the course. So
that's awesome. There's a retired professional pitcher who's one of the senior known 50s guys. I can't remember his name, Charlie something. I didn't know. I met him at the last tournament, but another, you know, former professional athlete who's out there shooting archery.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a surreal experience. And for me, it's sort of like Zen mode. I mean, archery in itself, that's why I say it's a lifetime sport. Sort of like jogging. I mean, there's great health benefits to it. I mean, it does so much for yourself because archery is 90% mental. And if you're able to follow a process that gives you center, you can apply those same principles to anything that you do, not just sports. And that's one of the things that I leverage. The mindset and some of the mental practice that I practice now really does help with business. It really does.
Yeah.
So super cool.
So you did, then you went to the NFA Super Shoot. You did all
those. My God. And Yankton. You talk about marathon. Like a lead. Oh, my God. So another crazy day. So my Pierce Tours got there. Beautiful. You know, shooting the first day. I'm like posting up on YouTube. I'm practicing on a 10-centimeter target. Like the X is about the size of a dime. And I'm shooting that at 50 meters or no, 60 yards. I'm shooting that at 60 yards with a 10 mile an hour crosswind and I'm railing the X and the 10, like, and you know, things are going great. You know, I'm figuring out where I need to shoot off with the wind and all that kind of good stuff. And the next day I can't hit the broadside of a barn. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure that, you know, this is the outdoor target nationals. And I'm trying to figure out why at 60 yards, I cannot hit the broadside of a barn. I'm like hitting sevens, I'm hitting eights, and then every so often I'll hit an X. And, you know, long story short, what ended up happening is in my Pierce Tours, the fact weight system came apart. And it misbalanced my shafts, which I didn't know.
You had the screw-in weights in the back.
Yeah, I had the screw-in weights, and I didn't know that they had unscrewed. And I had I had a dozen arrows that I had mixed in. Some of them came off, and some of them stayed in.
Wow.
So I couldn't figure out what was going on. Every once in a while, I hit an 8, and then I hit an X. Like, what's going on here? But that's what it was. So I ended up shooting. So I say this because I ended up shooting my 25s.
At 60 yards. Yeah,
at 60 yards.
That's something to do.
So at 40 and at 30, I was like cleaning it up with the 25s in the 10 to 15 mile an hour crosswind.
Oh, man.
I couldn't find the broadside of a barn with my Pierce Tours, man. This is what's so fun and intriguing about archery, trying to figure out these little nuances.
Yeah, how about that? That's one of those things, like I'll never forget talking to Paige Pierce about how she shoots the 101-yard Bigfoot at Redding. And she said something crazy, like she has to pull her sight all the way in, and then her hand torque means she has to give like 39 clicks to the right. So when she does that, you know, she's like, nobody talk to me because I have to get these counts right. You know, just crazy. That's something she has figured out. But
yeah, no,
you only Paige's do that by doing it.
Yeah, she is crazy with all her technical positioning and like trying to get clearance from the top of the bottom of the sight to the top of her vein and all that kind of good stuff.
So she shoots a 2-fletch arrow at the 101 yard Bigfoot.
Yep. And she's accurate.
Oh yeah. Hey, you can't argue with the results, man.
Again, the funny things about archery, the things that you can do to just like MacGyver-esque, you know, certain things to make it work. Not that you want to take that approach every time, but there's the ability to try. I try and do something like that with cycling, I'll end up off the side of a cliff. I mean, you can't do that.
So, you went to Gator Cup, yes?
Yeah, I ended up going to Gator Cup to finish out the year because I went from, so I did SoCal. Yep. I ended up finishing fourth there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that brought me from, I think, 27th in the country up to 12th.
Wow.
Right. And then, no. So I'm sorry. When I did fourth at SoCal, it brought me from 12th up to fourth.
Okay. Yeah. My goal currently ranked fourth. Yeah.
I see. Right. I was currently ranked fourth. And then from there, I needed to maintain my point status because only the top five make the USAT team. So obviously I had to go do Gator Cup knowing that it was going to be crazy windy. You know, like it normally is when they usually have it sometime in April.
In the spring,
spring. So,
and you finished ninth there.
Yeah, I finished ninth there with 30 mile an hour gusts. I mean, that was just ridiculous. Just to give you perspective, I'm nobody. I've only been shooting at this point, you know, a year and 4 months. At Gator Cup, Tim Gillingham, Braden Gellentine, myself, and a guy named Brian Cronin were the only ones that shot higher than a 132 in the head-to-heads.
Is that right?
Yeah, everybody else shot under 132. Braden, Tim, myself, and this guy named Brian were the only ones that shot in the head-to-head matches going into the quarterfinals and the top eight, the quarterfinals, semifinals, et cetera, were the only ones that shot above a 132. That's how windy it was.
Well, that's pretty good company to be in, huh?
Yeah, I was mad because my coach at the—I mean, I just got into coach right before Gator Cup. D. Fox. I don't know.
Oh,
if you
yeah,
know him.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the end of the season was coming close. I drinking from a fire hose. I realized that if I have any ambitions for something that I'm going to announce on your podcast that I haven't told anybody yet, but I'm going to do a first announcement here. I knew that I would need a coach, so I. 2 weeks previous to that, me and Dee got together because we had met at Yankton and we had a great conversation. And, you know, he saw that I was a decent shooter. And I said, you know, I've got a lot of work to do. Can you help me? He said, yeah. But yeah, he helped me kind of get my mind right, knowing that I still needed practice shooting in the wind. And, you know, I did my best that I could do. And unfortunately, right at qualifications, I'd find out that my mother passed away of COVID. So that was something that I had to deal with right then and there.
It was literally an hour before. That.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
An hour before qualifications, that I found out that she had passed away. So, you know, I dealt with it the best that I could and I gave it my best shot and ended up finishing ninth. I qualified ninth and finished ninth.
Gotcha. And that was what you needed to do to hold your position for 2021 USAT.
Yeah, I mean, so myself and Brian Cronin actually tied for third in the country. And because I finished fourth at Nationals and he finished ninth, by proxy, I then ended up being the third person or number three person in the country, number three archer in the country. But obviously all of us making the national team. And my goal at the beginning of the year was just to make the top five. And I ended up being third behind Tim Keith.
Right. That's amazing. So now you're gearing up for 2021. I mean, you met your goal. You got on the team.
Yep.
Now you're ready to go. So
yep, I'm ready to go.
So what would that? So we're talking like going to all the World Cups and the USATs, et cetera.
Yeah. So World Cup's going to be hard because of the restrictions that are happening right now. But I had some aspirations for doing some of the indoor World Cups, like Rome and Germany and Nice, but those aren't going to happen. To do the World Cup, you have to be in the top four in a senior class to be able to do, like, you know, Moscow, China, Singapore. You can't, like, the Hyundai series, you can't do that unless you're on the senior national team. So unfortunately, I won't get that opportunity until 2022, wherein my hope is, and I hope you don't mind allowing me to make this announcement now, is that I am going to be shooting in the senior league in 2021. So I'm going to be shooting against Rio. I'm going to step my toe in the deep end once again and say, what do I have to lose? though I didn't win and though I didn't get on the podium, I was consistent enough to know that with proper coaching and the same type of commitment, there's no reason why I can't compete at the senior level. And my scores during these USAC put me anywhere between 25 and 15 in placing for the senior league for my scores. So that told me that with a little bit of proper coaching and the right mentality and mindset, there's no reason why I can't be competitive in the senior league. So in 2021, I'll be shooting in the senior league with the hopes of making the senior national team in my second year.
Yes.
And with God's blessing, hopefully crack the top four, but I'm not going to hold my breath because only the top four get to go to the World Cup. So,
and it's, I mean, that's something to note that, getting your score just into the top, I forget what the number is. If you just get in, you can shoot your way up. I mean, it's like the classic. Everybody always says, hey, I don't have to shoot the best score out there. I just got to shoot good enough to get in. And then you go to head-to-heads, anything can happen there.
Anything. I mean, I've already proven that this year. I almost beat Keith. I beat Tim. Anybody can be beaten on any given day. And what I tell myself always when I get on the line, I'm better than everyone and I'm better than no one. Because from that perspective, it gives me focus and pause to say, this is where you show how you're better or how you may fall back.
Right,
but
right.
We don't know that is. We don't know what that is until we put forth that effort. So yeah. I'm better than everyone and I'm better than no one.
That's awesome. So you're going to shoot senior division at the USATs. How about ASAs? Are you planning ASAs for 2021?
Known pro, PJ. Oh, my God.
Whoa, known pro.
Yeah, I'm going to do it, man.
Yes.
I have more of a love for ASA, believe it or not, just because of the people and the people that I interact with when I'm there and just the feeling, the organizers, Mike Terrell and his crew, all the people that I met this year shooting from, you know, the women's, you know, known 40 all the way up to, you know, Dan McCarthy and those guys, which, you know, I mean, they're super, super nice guys. And, you know, I'll do another announcement. So Dan McCarthy, even though it's been a COVID year and they've reduced their staff, Dan McCarthy was kind enough to assist me in being picked up by Black Eagle. So in 2021, I'm going to be shooting Black Eagle arrows.
Awesome. That's great. Man, you're just rolling along. All right, I'm going to throw some names out there for you then. I'm sure you know them already. Robert Householder, Jacob Marlowe, Chance Boboff, Donnie Thacker, Braden Gellentine sometimes when he shows up there. This is your competition. I mean,
that's my competition.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
So right now, I'm happy to show you again. I did the same thing with ASA that I did with USAT. Curtis Broadnax, Cole Frederick, Robert Householder at the Sweetwater ASA. This is one of the reasons why it gave me a pause and hope to say that I might be competitive in these areas. I finished seventh behind them in a 60 arrow shoot. 30 one day, 30 the next. And I finished seventh behind Curtis, Cole Frederick, and Robert Householder.
Gotcha. That's
incredible. If I can do that on any given day and I practiced. I got a full range now. Yeah. I had a half range after Coleman, but I have a full range now. And I've got 20 cut lanes at my range that I shoot at, so I can change things up, lighting, whatever. So hopefully if I apply myself and, you know, get coached the proper way, I think that I can be competitive. Cause like right now my scores are probably around 15, 12 down, which is considerable over 2 days. So we're only looking at 6.5, 12s, you know, I mean, if I change some of these eights that I get consistently to 12s or 10s, I mean, it puts me, you know, around the 424 mark, 430. I know Householder and those guys shoot 444, 450, and stuff like that. But all I'm trying to do is just get my foot in the door at the top five. And all I'm trying to do is one ASA, I just want to make the shoot off. And I know guys have been trying to do this for years, but if I can get, even if I get close to getting my toe in the door, that's telling me that I'm not expecting everything to happen in 2 years. Like, you know, hey, make the U.S. Nationals. Hey, make the U.S. National Team for senior. Hey, make the top 15 shooter of the year. I mean, that's what my goal is actually for ASA, is just to make the top 15 in a shooter of the year in my first year. If I'm able to do that amongst the people that are shooting, I think that'll be a worthwhile effort to show that everything that I'm doing is moving in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, now let's play a little what if here, Jose. What okay. if? How do you think you're going to feel? I know you've been on the big stage with your cycling, but what if you make that shoot down? Known pro, you're out there in front of the competition archery media cameras. You're on the Sportsman's Channel. People out there are watching Jose Drapeau out there competing with these guys.
I mean, like I said, I know all these guys. I've talked with them. I've actually asked them dozens of questions at times here or there. So when I get on the line, one thing that you should know, and others that are listening to this podcast that are wanting to start up archery, when you step on the line, there's nobody to the left. There's nobody to the right. It's just you, your bow, and whatever you're trying to hit. And that's what I think about. Now, granted, there's nerves, obviously, you know. I mean, there's going to be, but you have to learn how to manage those things. And I've been fortunate in being in those circumstances, but even with archery, it's different. For me, it's just practicing with what I've been practicing when I practice out on the range. You know, I practice getting that mindset in the right place, quiet the mind, go through my mantra, and know that there's nobody to the left and there's nobody to the right, and that you have a game plan and you follow that game plan and you execute. If you do that, you know, effectively, then you're going to be competitive. If not with somebody else, with at least yourself.
That known pro class, the more that I think of it, it's just that, how just some incredible archers in that division there. 3-time Vegas champ Jesse Broadwater. I lift him off the list there. How can you forget him? Then you got young guys like Brady Hempen, who, you know, just narrowly got beat for Shooter of the Year this year by Robert Householder, but he's a young kid just shooting phenomenally. I mean, there's just all ages and types and guys who excel at, you know, this discipline and that discipline, and they come in there to that known pro. And there's probably legitimately 15 different guys who could win any tournament. I mean, on the right day, boom, they could win it.
Yeah. 100% agree with you. But for me, my mindset when going to any of these competition is the expectation and intent, right? My intent isn't to, you know, I mean, I'd like to win, but that's not the expectation or the reality. My intent is to better myself in knowing that I can achieve a certain level of success against these guys and myself, not just them. It's also against myself. And anybody that steps on that line, they're always looking for their PR. And if they're not, they should be. They should not be trying to do a score of 446 like Robert Householder if in practice they've never done it. So my expectations are going to be set by what I'm able to do from a consistent standpoint and bringing that to the reality and hoping and knowing that if my effort is on par with myself to be able to push myself to do well in these competitions, then I would have succeeded. Because for me, there's learning, right? And there's winning. There's never learning and losing. So for me, it's going to be a plus plus. I know it sounds corny, but it's true. People that think like, well, you competed and then you lost. That's not how you should think. If you learned anything like I did, I went from 42nd to 13th to 16th and then 13th and 2 to the year, even though it's less competitive. I learned so much in that transition that it's given me the confidence to do with what I'm doing right now, which is stepping my foot in there with the big boys. You know, archers or people that are interested in archery should not take a chance in trying it because they're fearful, all right? There's nothing to fear. I mean, this is not death and taxes, right? So archery is something that should be fun. It should be self-uplifting and that you should find purpose. And when you do it, that it gives you purpose, right? So when you shoot, it, you know, the purpose is, you know, feeling good about yourself, feeling good that you've learned something new and that you're applying that, whatever you've learned to archery, right? Don't let that fear of competing against someone else keep you from actually stepping on the line and trying archery for the first time.
That is great advice. And that is certainly something we hope others pick up because, excuse me, I'm a bow hunter. That's where I come from. But okay, I go out in an archery season. I might get to shoot my bow one time. Well, I like shooting my bow. So that was how I actually got into competition. I was like, I like just shooting this bow. I don't care what I'm shooting at. And so then I started shooting local stuff. But you have to be able to get over the fact that I may be out there and get my butt kicked. And well, so what? I had fun. I learned something. I'm making myself better. So Jose, I remember you telling me that you have been working on your USA Archery National Training, I forget what the S stands for, system, your coaching certification. You're now at what level?
Yeah, I'm a level 3 now. I just recently passed my level 3. So there's level 4 and then level 5, which I don't know if I'll ever get to level 5, but you know, with what I feel about archery and you know, what I've learned in the last year and this kind of baptism of fire, if you will, it's put a fire in me about wanting to learn properly how to instruct archery because I learned from YouTube videos and drinking from a fire hose and I wouldn't recommend anybody else doing with what I did. So I'm learning the NTS system 1, 2, 3, and hopefully 4 here in the next year to be able to show others how to properly get into the sport of archery and be coached properly. So, you know, I've got the reins that actually brought me into the fold and I'll be starting up a JOAD program there and hopefully get these young people to become interested in archery. So I'm hoping that'll be my contribution to the sport.
Gotcha. That is certainly awesome. D Falks, I believe, is a level 4, if I remember.
Yeah. He actually is a person, believe it or not, a lot of people don't know this. Him working with Lee, in California, he created the NTS level 3. So he was the author, the primary author. There was 3 or 4 other coaches involved, but he was the primary author of the level 3 NTS system. So he was very proud being my coach that I actually passed that course.
I guess that would have been kind of bad if you didn't, right?
Yeah, I think so too. But it's awesome.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. We certainly thank our guest today, Jose Drapeau. Got it right that time. Jose, thanks for being here with us.
Hey, man, PJ, I humbly appreciate the opportunity and time to talk with you guys. You guys, I'm your biggest fan, to tell you the truth, so I really love listening to your podcast, and hopefully, you know, you'll have more interesting people that I can learn from in the future.
Gotcha. Great. Well, folks, you can find the Competition Archery Media Podcast wherever you find your podcast. We are on all the platforms out there. Thanks for joining us.